Recording in progress.
Okay. Okay, I'm hanging up the phone now.
Steph, will
Chrissy,
you
you
let
want
us?
to go ahead and launch us? Because the
Sure.
hour is going to go quickly.
It is. Hello, all, and welcome to our virtual Women in Pharma panel for the Rocky Mountain ISPE chapter. I'm Crystal Peden. I'm with American Company, and I am your current Rocky Mountain ISPE chapter president. I'm so glad that you all can be with us today for this exciting event. I'm very much looking forward to hearing and learning from each of our amazing panel of industry leaders. Before we get started with the main event, I want to share with you some exciting upcoming RMISPE events. Our next event is our largest event of the year, and that's the vendor show. Hopefully, you all are aware of that and have seen the emails come out about the event. It's taking place 3 weeks from today on Thursday, March 19th, at a new location this year, the Limelight Hotel in Boulder. It is still free to attend, and we still do have booths available as well as sponsorships if you are interested in that. And you can find registration information on our website. The day after the vendor show is our ski day at Copper Mountain. We will have a ski bus again this year, taking people from the Front Range up to Copper. Lunch is hosted by Murphy Company. You must pre-register to join in for both lunch at the condo or riding the ski bus. And so, even if you have a pass and you're just headed up for the day, if you want to join us for lunch, we do ask that you pre-register for that. And that's also available on our website. A few additional dates to save for you will be our Rocky Mountain ISPE's spring educational event taking place at the Westin Westminster. And that's on Thursday evening, April 16th. We have Julie Stiff with, sorry, we have Julie Stiff joining us, as well as one of our colleagues from Cumming Group, and excited to hear from them. Therapeutic Thursday is on Thursday, May 21st. It's a great lead-in to Memorial Day weekend. And you might have noticed the backgrounds that all of us speakers have on this. And it is our 30th anniversary, a big milestone for our chapter. And we're planning on hosting a party to celebrate that on Saturday, June 20th. Additional details will be coming out soon. So keep a look out for your emails. We're going to look for engagement from people on photos and stories about the last 30 years of our chapter. We have a couple of ways for everybody to communicate. We have our webinar chat. That's if you want to kind of talk with each other or comment on something that the panelists are saying. And then we also have our Q&A, which is an opportunity for you to put in a question for the panelists. Kieran will be asking questions of our panelists throughout, and then we'll leave some time for Q&A at the end to answer your questions. So, without further ado, I'm going to pass it off to Kieran to get our panel kicked off.
Thank you so much, Crystal. Well, welcome everyone. Welcome to our esteemed panelists. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. And just welcome to everybody who's joining from wherever you are. We're thrilled that you're going to be a part of this conversation. So we are talking today about women leadership and decision making in the era of AI. And first off, I am going to just introduce you to these amazing women so that you can get a sense of their background and perspectives. So I'm going to start with Robin. Robin Anselmi is the CEO and president at Conversant. She began her career as an engineer in a manufacturing facility before transitioning into financial services as an operations analyst. For over 2 decades, she's combined her passion for design with the art of conversation, working with clients around the world in financial services, manufacturing, fashion, healthcare, technology, and the nonprofit sector. She loves helping others cultivate deeper connections through meaningful conversations and finding more joy in their work. Robin holds a BS in ceramic engineering from Rutgers and an MBA from the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. And Sally Dyer is with us. She has over 30 years of working in the biotech industry locally and abroad. She joined Umoja Biopharma in February of 22 as the Senior Vice President and General Manager for Colorado Operations. Umoja has established operations at the Colorado Laboratory and Innovative Manufacturing Building, the CLIMB, located in Louisville, Colorado, with the aim of creating in vivo CAR T therapeutics. Over the course of her career, she's leaned upon the leadership principles of building an empowered team that acts with purpose for patients, as well as with a sense of community. Sally holds a BS in Biological Sciences from University of California at Davis. So welcome, Sally. And Laura Goldberg has 30 years of experience working in regulated industry, including medical devices, clinical, biologics, and pharmaceuticals. She's worked in manufacturing, quality, and research labs, and made a career in quality assurance and regulatory. She has a passion for taking products from early development to commercial use. She's now the head of quality and regulatory at Agilent Technologies, working closely with engineers who are committed to delivering synthetic RNA and DNA therapies to pharmaceutical companies. Laura holds a Bachelor of Science in Microbiology from Colorado State University. Welcome, Laura. And Dr. Tina Kiang, who is the Director of the Division of Regulations and Guidance in OPQ-OPPQ. Dr. Kiang began her career at the FDA in 2005 as a chemistry and engineering reviewer in the Division of Ophthalmic and Ear, Nose, and Throat Devices in CDRH. By 2018, Tina became the director of the Division of Drug Delivery and General Hospital Devices and Human Factors in the Office of Health Technology III. She received her Bachelor of Engineering in Chemical Engineering from the Cooper Union in New York and her PhD in Biomedical Engineering from the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. So, welcome, Tina. Fantastic. So, thank you all for being here. The roots of this conversation actually stem from a conversation that Robin and I had over the holidays, where we were talking about AI coming into our lives in work, in our personal worlds, and how that was being fielded and by different people at different ages of their careers, how it was impacting our relationships with each other as people. And so out of that conversation stemmed the idea for this panel. That as women leaders, as this tool becomes more and more a part of our daily work and life, how do we go about decision making? How does it impact that? So this is the context for the conversation today. And I'll just be starting some questions with all of you, and then you can jump in and give your feedback as people answer. So to begin with, what I'd like to do is just set the stage, and I'll start with you, Tina, by asking, how are you currently using AI in your work?
Hi, thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to have this conversation with you guys on this very, very evolving topic. I think we're hearing more and more about AI use every single day. And so for me, I look at for AI, in my work, quote unquote, I look at it in a three, for me, it's three different things. One is my personal use. Another is how my team and my staff use it in order to do their work. And then, of course, how we regulate it as FDA, there's this kind of three-pronged way of looking at it from my point of view. So I'll take them one at a time. One for me, we have, within my own personal day-to-day, I use it for small things. Give me a summary of this. I have a large document that I need a summary for. I don't have time to like look through all the things, but I want some key points. And so I'll upload a document, ask for the key points, or ask for specific key points. It may be on a particular issue that I'm looking for in the document. The big thing for me is no matter what I do, I'm always going to double check because I feel that the technology is still new and nuance, especially in terms of language and presentation, can sometimes get lost. And so for me, it's even though it I do occasionally use it as a trust and ver but verify type situation. In terms of the staff and how we work at FDA, we have an AI tool, our own chat tool called ELSA. I think we've heard of it if you've been in the pharma industry.
for a bit. This, it's a closed system. It's not connected to the internet, so that we are allowed to kind of upload documents that would norm, we don't want it fed into the, into the world. We can upload confidential documents in order to use it. We have other tools as well that are closed that we can work in. We have our policy library that we work in that was developed, that contain all of our quality policy, and so we can grab information from that. But there's also like little day-to-day things that could that we can use else for refining emails or refining, language that we're going to be putting into some of our documentation. But the main thing that I emphasize with my team is if you're going to use it, you are responsible for it. You are ultimately responsible for the content. You can't just take it and put it in and say, have a good time and that's it. Everything, has to be double checked, and you have to make sure that, the content, regardless of the content has to start from you and has to end with you. You can use the tool in the middle, but it always has to start with you and end with you. And so that's the second part of it. And then the third part of it is regulating industry. And we have to put out policy documents, and AI guidance, for clinical development, drug development, excuse me, published last year, that had, a clinical example and a manufacturing example kind of at a high level, thinking about how to do credibility assessment and risk assessment. But we just announced it just public, on our CDER guidance agenda that we are actually developing an AI guidance for manufacturing, for pharmaceutical manufacturing. And so that'll be the next step to, talk to industry and give them guidance on, what we expect from them on that point of view. So I think, there are different layers to it, and from our day to day when we talk about it, and we have to look at those, each of those things in its own way and with its unique characteristics.
Well, I sure get the sense of the responsibility, right, of managing this carefully and with thoughtfulness. And I'm curious, Sally, how about for you? How is it impacting your work?
Well, I think this is being able to be on this panel has been a catalyst, I will say, because I consider myself an early adopter. Typically in technology, I would say AI. I'm a little bit more curious about how we can use it, questioning it a little bit more. But I do appreciate, being able to be part of this group, and even after a prep call, leaning into it a little bit, and really looking into how are people using it. Umoja is a small company. We aren't, spending a lot of our resources on this yet. We have an internal system that we use, that people can use, for, we do a lot of kind of market analysis and research, kind of front end of drug development and maybe the back end, but not so much use in the middle. But it is quite variable across the team on how people are adopting it. I think from again, from a point of leadership, it's really important for us to understand that more in depth, like how are people using it? Understanding the risks, what are some of the pitfalls, and certainly as a leader being engaged from a point of ensuring that we are engaging responsibly and with curiosity, and really leveraging how can we use it as a tool in terms of improving efficiency, consistency, maybe looking at how we can run our operations better, and support our team. So maybe reducing some of the burden of how we do work are some places where we're exploring how we're using it. But again, personally, one of the conversations I had getting ready for this was with a recent college grad intern who encouraged me to practice writing some prompts and being very clear with how you come up with a prompt to get a good outcome of using the tool. And so I made myself a prompt to remind me weekly to practice going in to make a prompt, because you can prompt yourself to prompt, is what I've learned so far, and how we can
That's
start using it
fantastic.
and becoming more familiar with AI opportunities.
It didn't occur to me, but I suppose we could have asked, how should I prepare for this panel, right?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. See, not using it enough yet. Laura, how about for you?
Again, thank you for having me as well. I fit very similar to Sally. So, although I've been working for many years, AI is still a little bit new to me. But I mean, so far, I really like some of the efficiencies. So, I also liked how Tina divided up into those kind of three buckets. And I can, in my mind, it's like the personal bucket and the work bucket. And from a personal perspective, what I like is the, just more information at your fingertips, right? Like the access to information over, the span of my career has been amazing, right? Like the old days, you're like in a, a library making copies out of a textbook to try to design an experiment. Now we can go to the internet and, find information. And now with AI and with some of the tools that there is, you can really focus your search on the exact thing that you're looking for. So those are the sorts of things that I like, is being able to access that information quicker, right? Versus, scrolling through a lot of links that are taking you nowhere. I like bringing a little bit of that healthy skepticism slash criticism, right, as you're doing research, to make sure that you're hearing the same thing from multiple resources. And then when you're getting those answers, that they're coming from credible resources as well. And then from a work perspective, even outside of the regulated part of the job that we do, we do a lot of personal interactions. We write reviews, we give people feedback. I like how you can use it to take what you've written in the past and create something new using thoughts and outlines and things that are a little messy, and it can help you polish it, but then you can read it and then just make little adjustments to make it your own voice. So I might say that I used it during my annual reviews for my staff. So it really helped because I could take the high level the points from the year. I use my own words to create new reviews and just add a little bit of adjustment. So it works really nice in those aspects as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Robin, tell us your thoughts and how you're seeing it used.
Yeah, so I'm the non-industry person on the call, and I come at this from the leadership perspective and really looking at how are leaders using it. And to some of the things that all of the panelists have talked about, what is a leader's responsibility for actually looking at how their teams are using it? Personally, I also like, Tina, your distinctions. So I think there's lots that I use it for personal, both in my personal life and in my work on the work side. And then looking at it from a team perspective, I think when I think about it from a leader's perspective, some of the things that have already been touched on, I just want to emphasize. AI does hallucinate. It does tell you things that are not accurate. I had this happen yesterday with a team member who put together a report, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this one thing didn't actually come up in those conversations. And so you do really have to be paying attention because it will feed things in. It wasn't that it was wrong. It was that in all of the we don't use as much analytical data. It's much more empirical. But in all of the empirical interviews, there was a sentence that it pulled out as a theme that one person out of 25 said. So like, don't really count that as a theme when there's only one of them. So you do have to really be paying attention to it. I think for me, the question that's on my mind most with leaders today is what is it that humans do uniquely that we should be paying attention to? What are going to be the pitfalls with AI going forward? AI does not look at things through an ethical lens. Right, ethics are not part of what is in the conversation, and I think for this community in particular, that's going to be a really important element of how we think about AI going forward. The other thing I've said from a leadership perspective is that it can be a really great thought partner. And my word of caution for all of us is most of the AIs, depending on which agent or platform you're using, have a positivity bias. If you've ever noticed this, they tend to affirm your ideas, which I said in one of our prep calls, to me is telling about how many people use it and how many leaders are not providing some of that positive affirmation for their teams. So even if an idea maybe isn't great to really get to, yes, but
I can see that you're trying to think about something here that's meaningful to the organization. And if you notice, AI is really quick to have some sort of positive affirmation for almost anything you give it, unless you prompt it not to do it. So left to its own devices, it's going to give you a lot of that's a great idea. Here's how to take that idea forward without necessarily always giving you some of the critical thinking that you need. So I think those are some of my initial thoughts around like how to use it, but also how to be paying attention to some of the things that might be tricky. And I think you're probably going to take us there next.
Yeah. Well, yes, and it ties to accountability for sure, right? Like we at the end of the day, we're accountable for what we use this for, how much we've taken a close look at what it's producing for us and so forth. Sally, looks like you want to
I just
comment.
wanted to comment. Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think, even from this panel and what Robin just talked about, I think one of the risks we will think very technically about risks of AI. And what was really has been eye-opening to me in this process are the risks. We talk about human in the loop, but we also have to keep the humans in the loop in the loop. So the human risk, I think, is something leaders can overlook. And so I think the idea of kind of coaching people, just kind of mentioning like, hey, people, this is going to be affirming. And so that's something that we need to be looking out for. I think as technology, sometimes we have to know, be told kind of here's what we know, we don't know maybe about how something might be posing a risk. And I think, again, the idea that one of the risks is, the affirming information and making sure we're getting disconfirming information still as part of the analysis and looking out for people. And maybe again, as from a leadership perspective, that's something that leaders should lean into is understanding how people are impacted by the use of AI.
Yeah.
Tina, it looks like you
Yeah,
have a
I
thought.
think the other thing that again, when we talked about this during our prep, the nomenclature around AI and there's a lot of discussion about like, well, especially if you're having AI do analysis for you, for example, there's a lot, there's this, tendency to say that the AI decided, like it's making a decision. No, it's not. It's providing an output. It's providing an output and a human, again, going back to what Sally just said about the human in the loop it's, the human being is one that's making a decision. I might be jumping ahead to the next question. It's the human being that's making the decision. Decisions are made by people. Ultimately, AI is still software. It's very intel, it's trained in a different way. It provides output in a different way. It can give you analyses. It can sound very human, but it's not. And so I think that we have to not use the nomenclature about AI decision making. No, AI is providing output, and how that output is utilized, whether there is human intervention or not after the next step is taken, is still a human decision. And so that accountability, as we were talking about, can't be forgotten.
I think one of the things in that becomes so tricky, again, back to my sort of concern about it with this affirmation bias, right, is that it will give you some of the things it thinks about the decision that you're gonna be making. And I know that that is weird language to use about like what it thinks, but it is sort of processing through. There was a study, it was done in 2015, that says 58% of Americans trust a stranger on the street more than they trust their manager. 58%. And so now you've got a blinded kind of study, right, where you've got people, the number of people that are currently using AI as a trusted partner, it depends on the numbers and how you sort of ask the question, but it ranges anywhere from 50 to 80%, right, which is in kind of nutty, right? So you have people that are actually going to the technology as opposed to their managers or to others, to other humans for some of that input. And so, Tina, I think this is exactly that point is you can bias the opinions that it gives you or the recommendations that it gives you by being really limited in the point of view that you present to it. So if you only present your point of view and you don't present any from the people around you, you're going to get a very affirming, like in the direction of the decision you want to make, which I think leaves a lot of leaders very nervous about how people's critical thinking skills. And are they actually able to look at that and discern what's the bias associated with that? Is there sort of a directional affirmation that it's giving you when you haven't actually given it all of the different inputs that it might need. And I think that's the thing for leaders to have some caution around is, are people going to it versus to you because you're not actually listening to what they have to say? It does listen in a very unique way in that it gives you so much back around like what it thinks you're good, like what it thinks your good intentions are. And I don't know that humans are the current human operating system actually defaults to that. We don't always look for the good intention inside of the ideas.
Yeah. Laura.
Yeah, actually it was very interesting that you were talking about that because you can even have that dynamic when you're talking to people, right? Like as a leader, you can surround yourself with a bunch of people who agree with you and you're not getting the fullness of the conversation or trying to understand all points of view to move forward. So it's interesting that you kind of frame it like that because thinking of AI as just another voice or thinking it as more of that spectrum might be an interesting way to think about it.
And I think
Yeah.
Tina started to touch on this. One of my concerns about it is I think humans give it more credibility than they do other humans, right? So like when it comes forward and set like gives you something back, I think we assume it's more logical than we are, right? And so I wonder about that in our conversations with it, right? Are we actually giving it more credibility than we would the expert that sits in the office next to us?
And at the same time, in the same vein, I think it's also about, it's not only just more credibility, it's the thing that and it may get there right now, but it's trained to look, AI is trained to look for patterns, patterns in, patterns in language, patterns in data, patterns. But what it can sometimes miss is nuance. So it can see language in a certain documents and whatnot. But you may not always get the nuance of the language that surrounded, that kind of factoid or, sentence that was pulled out as an example. And so I think, that's where I think the person looking at the output needs to understand, okay, what am I missing? I've had points where I've had, where I've put in a document, get a summary, and I've read the output, and I'm like, this doesn't quite sound right. And then you go to the actual where it is in the document. You do a word search, you find it in the document, and you see that the surrounding language actually contextualizes it in a slightly different way than how the output was interpreted. And so that's the type of thing I think you have to be careful of because the nuances, that nuance in the language, again, because human beings use language very differently and sometimes not in the most logical way, or there may be cultural aspects to use of a language. There are other aspects of use of language that may not necessarily be picked up on by the like a large language model that's doing an analysis.
Yeah. Well, it's a great segue to a question that I want to pose. And whomever wants to kick off the answer, feel free. But in thinking about the prep conversation we had, and like you, Sally, it's been on my mind, right, a lot lately because of the panel. But as women leaders, what capabilities and skills do we need to develop to be able to manage this tool, to be able to leverage it, but also not be susceptible, right, to the human vulnerabilities that I think it can pose a risk to. And I'm thinking too about, young women in mid-career, like how do we sort of, what capabilities do we really need to strengthen? And I think you were just referring to that analytical right side. I think that's a capability that we have to polish and sharpen in preparation for this. But yeah, I'm curious to hear what you all think. Go ahead, Tina.
If I can jump in, since
It's a good
what I
segue.
just said kind of led into it, I think that ultimately whoever is using it still has to have the basic skills necessary to do the job that they are doing. Oh, and that is key. And so the job that we have in my shop, we write guidance and regulation. the person still needs to have those essential skills of being able to interpret scientific information, analyze information, and then put it down on paper in a way that makes sense as policy while understanding the laws and the regulations and our precedents. And so you can't have someone who is fresh and doesn't know how to do that ask a prompt in AI, get language out, and know, okay, this is great. You have to know all of this, all of that stuff that I just talked about in order to see if that, again, that output that you get makes any sense. You know, it could, the language could be not nuanced correctly. There is specific language in our policy writing, for example, that we can and cannot use because the language of regulation, for example, is very specific. And so if you use and is not typically used in the same way as, you know, normal conversational English speaking. And so the person still has to have those basic skills of the job. The second thing is, you know, the person, even though an AI could potentially help assist writing and structuring sentences, but the person still has to know how to write. You know, you can't take that away. And so the biggest thing is when we're looking at that, we are seeing some people use it. We're seeing it in, you know, some things that we're receiving. And it's like, oh, I think an AI did this because it doesn't quite match what we would typically expect, or it doesn't, the language used isn't quite right, you know, in terms of. And so I think we have to be very critical and understand that no matter who is doing the job, they still would need to be able to do the job without the AI. The AI is assisting, not doing. Yeah, I think we, and maybe since this is a like an engineering audience, I think, you know, we've lived through other technological shifts, right? Maybe everyone doesn't remember all paper records or all manual valves in manufacturing plants, right? Then we moved to automated systems and automated records. And I think this is maybe just the next iteration of that, if we can look at it that way. And when we went into all the previous technology shifts, you know, you go in with a healthy amount of skepticism, but also some optimism around how can we make sure that this makes us more efficient and again more reproducible, more consistent in how we do what we do. And I think maybe at this early kind of the front end of it, maybe we should have this panel again in 5 years and see what's happened, but or maybe even one, because it's gonna be faster, right?
Maybe one, yeah.
Everything's gonna be faster. But I think if we could be, you know, kind of curious and skeptical at the same time as we enter into this, and there's probably going to be, I keep hearing there's going to be kind of this double dip. Like we're going to look at the AI and then we're going to say, well, maybe this source is really still the thing I need to be reading to do the thinking part. So in the interim, there might be kind of double things that we're doing as we explore going into it. But I think I'm still confident that we'll navigate this as we have previously and land in a good you know a good place on how we can best leverage this tool.
Yeah, and I was gonna say something similar, Sally. So just to add on, right? Like when I think of advances in technology, it's very like, you know, exponential in growth and how quickly it comes and how new it is and how quickly it's adopted. And AI is just kind of taking us to that next level. And I think one of the things that even we talked about when we were preparing was the idea of critical thinking and making sure that that becomes part of what people learn, right? Like how to still maintain the ability to think about things critically and to make those decisions. I bring an interesting perspective in that I have two teenagers that have just, you know, made it through high school and entering college. So they're kind of in the earlier phase of learning about AI. And I've had just a little bit of glimpse in how they're, you know, teaching it in school. And you know, you often hear if you're not using it now, and if you're not familiar with it, you're already too late, right? So I do know for some of the younger generations, they're asking themselves those exact same questions. And how do you still learn, but think critically, right? Like in the old days, you were in the back of a page looking up, you know, tables, then you had graphing calculators, now you have, right? So every step of the way, you know, I'm hopeful that AI can maybe help learning happen quicker, right? And faster. And yeah, so seeing that from the younger perspective is kind of interesting as well.
Yeah. Laura, I want to go back to something you actually you said a little while ago about like how we interact with people. And Ironically, I actually think AI can help us get better at some of our interactions with people. So if you think of it, and I know this also makes some people feel icky, but if you think of it like it's a conversation, and like you were saying, we don't always listen to the people around us. I also think we don't always ask the people around us great questions, and I don't think we always give the people around us the sufficient context to be able to actually answer the questions. And so I think AI actually forces us to practice those skills, right? So Sally, you even said like asking it how to prompt it, right? So if, even think about that. So if you got really good at asking the people around you, what's the best way to communicate with you? What's the best way? What kind of management do you need from me? What are you looking from me as a leader, right? Like we don't routinely ask those kinds of questions of the people that are on our teams. And I wonder what would happen if we did, if we got better at that. We also are terrible at giving the full context before we walk into somebody's office and say, hey, can you go do this thing? Right. And so with AI, you have to get better at all of that. Tina, to your point, if you're not giving it sufficient context, it can't give you really great answers. And so I do wonder, I think those are two areas of skill building that we need as leaders in an age of AI. And AI, I think, can actually help us if you choose to get better at those things. Because you'll see you can ask better questions and get better answers. If you play with it a little bit, you'll see if you keep asking essentially the same question, the answers get worse. So it's something about the way the language model works. I had somebody technical explain it to me one time. I understand it myself, but not sufficient to be able to explain it. But there is a technical reason why that happens. So you've really got to fit. But I also see that that sometimes happens with people. Like you keep asking essentially the same question and you're
I
not
think
necessarily
exactly.
getting better answers. And so I think there is a place here for it to actually help us get better potentially in how we interact with one another.
Yeah. Laura, it looked like you might have a thought that you wanted to add to that.
No,
Okay.
I think that was great. I was ready for back and forth conversation, but Robin, you hit the nail on the
No,
head.
Laura, please, did I miss something that you wanted
No. No, I
to
mean, I think
know?
these are all things that as you go through, leadership training or as you've developed into a leader throughout your career, those are all elements and hallmarks of what makes a good leader, right? The ability to ask those kinds of questions, the ability to ask for all the different opinions around you and things like that. So, to me, it's like leadership 101 almost.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking about you were speaking about your children and the Gen Z, which is coming into the workforce or in the workforce. I think as of this year, that's like the 19 to 29-year-old age group. And this age group is very savvy about AI. They know about the algorithms. They know about sort of the dark side, the bias side of what it can bring. And I think been a lot of research done on the anxiety that is actually caused by it because it feels threatening. Is this going to take over my opportunities for a job? Is someone going to, judge me if I can't cough up answers the way that AI could? And I think in our levels of responsibility and just nurturing, it's going to be a factor we're going to have to navigate. And it may already be showing up potentially in some of your work environments, but maybe Tina, I'll just start with you. Do you feel like, I mean, you've had a long career, you've grown your career through your experiences and going after different opportunities. How would you encourage the new folks that are coming into the FDA to work with this?
I think the big thing is knowing what it can do and what it can't do. Again, I'll give an example that I actually said in one of my meetings. As a reviewer, for example, I'll go back to my days as a reviewer, and this actually happened to one of my staff where they were reading a documentation, and you could use AI to help you analyze test results or something like that. You stick it in and have it give you a summary, and if you have specific pass, you s send it, give it pass fail criteria, submit a report, and say, as an example, does this meet the criteria? And someone, it could tell you yes or no and give you a summary report. You'd still need to understand how to work on it, understand what the content of the report means and whatever. However, and I'll give a real example.
I had a staff member of mine who was doing that kind of thing, didn't use, wasn't using AI, just doing it by themselves. You know, this is before we had our AI tool. And he noticed, oh, well, this report looks suspiciously like a report I read in a different document, you know. And so it was one of those things we caught someone, you know, copying data from someone else, you know, for example. An AI might not catch that. That's the human element that needs to be there. You know, you have those instincts, that memory of oh, I reviewed that yesterday and this looks eerily familiar to what I reviewed yesterday or a week ago. You know, that would never be caught by AI. And so we have to understand what the AI can do and what the AI can't do when we're doing our work. And those are the kind of subtleties or things that a human being with a brain, with a memory that has that kind of historical knowledge can bring, that just where you can say, oh, you could just feed a report in and it can tell you whether it passes or fails. Yes, but can that AI tell you that this, you know, this person is copying their reports for a different, you know, from a different, or stealing information from someone else or whatever? And it can't. It won't necessarily do that, you know? And so you have to, I think you have to be realistic about what the AI can provide and what you as a human being provides to it. And again, it goes back to, you still have to have that expertise. You still have to understand the nuances. You still have to understand the law. You still have to understand the job that you were brought in to do, so that AI can assist you, but not take over for you. And I think that's the part where, you know, yes, it can do analyses quicker, but what can it do with the analyses ultimately after? You get the output, you make the decisions in the end. So that's the type of thing, I think, knowing what you bring to the table, why you are hired, what skill sets you have, and how can AI supplement or augment that in a positive way.
I think the other, maybe the flip side of that question around how does it impact our jobs or does it put jobs at risk? I think certainly for in our industry, everything's until we, you know, there's it's all hands on. So maybe it's the work that goes around the work, but then is there a point where we're not doing our jobs if we're not using AI? Is there a point where it flips on it? You know, we and I think there was an article somebody pointed me to around a company that said it's now part of your job description to use AI, because if you're not using it, you're not work doing the best for your clients that you can be doing. It was a different industry, so a different output. But that to me was an interesting point of view to have as well, that if we aren't using it or aren't engaging with it, are we not, you know, changing our jobs or elevating our jobs to include, how can we be doing them better through the use of AI?
Yes, Allie, it's interesting. There was an article or a blog, something I read recently about college professors and their change in approach on AI. So it used to be, don't use AI. Like, cannot, you're going to get graded down if you use AI. And now it's, you better use AI, right? It's actually part of building that skill set. So I do think, and I loved your analogy earlier, and I agree with it. If you go back to all of the technological advancements that we've seen, starting with the printing press to today, right? The humans have always figured out, like, what is the thing that we do that this machine or method or other agent is freeing us to go make a different kind of contribution now. And I think that's going to be the question for us for the next foreseeable future on what's the human contribution if AI is doing some of this other work? Because Tina, I think you said it right at the start. Sally, you said in 5 years, then you backed it up to a year. We could probably have this conversation in a month and it might look different because it really is changing so quickly. And I think that's part of our job as leaders is to keep an eye on what are all the things that are changing about it and how do we help people to see their unique contribution in it. One of my colleagues likes to say, think of AI like a really great intern. And it's about that level, you know, and Tina, I think this goes back to yours. Like, if you had a really great intern, you wouldn't take their work and put your name on it, right, without actually being on the front and the back end of it. I think that's where it stands today. We'll see where it stands in 6 months or a year.
Yeah, and one of the things that I like to add, because I like how we started this conversation in very concrete examples, but sometimes I think about it from more of a philosophical edge. You know, I was a fan of Star Trek, and I think there's a lot of things that we can do as, you know, to help our planet and to help our species as humans. And sometimes I think of AI as helping us with some of the difficult things or some of the I'll say minutia, but if we know how to harness it and use it, then it frees our brains up to solve much larger problems like time-space continuum travel or exploring other planets or the technologies that are going to take us there and in different places. So sometimes that's how I like to think it from a philosophical perspective. I have no examples of that.
I love it. So I'm going to just take a quick check-in with you, Crystal. Do we have questions in the chat? I don't know that I have looked. So, because we can continue our conversation, but if there are
We
questions
have
of the
no
group.
questions in the chat yet, and I did.
Okay.
It's that's a good reminder to everybody. If you do have questions, please place them in the chat.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, I guess Sally, looked like you might
I
have
was
something
going
you
to
were going
say
to ask.
also, or a comment, like if somebody has something that they, heard that we should talk more about. I think maybe if there's no questions. I always like to hear what everyone else out there might be thinking
Yeah.
about what we're talking about, especially if we're missing a certain part of the conversation or aspect of this. So.
Yeah, if there's a particular thing you're interested in or whatnot. Well, I was thinking about we've talked a lot about how AI will is coming into our world and changing the way that we're analyzing things. But one of the flip sides for of that for me has been reflecting on the parts of my position or my job and others' jobs where human judgment, and we were talking about this a little bit, is really the most critical piece. You can get as much data using different tools and whatnot, but where we rely on human judgment for, you know, the ultimate answer or decision or pulling in a team together to make that call. If anyone has a thought about that, and I did see we just got a question come up, but if you could pick one area that you felt like you relied heavily on human judgment in your role, what would that be? I'm kind of springing this on you guys, you gals.
Trying to not say everywhere. That's what I, because I still feel like, well, everywhere. I can't think of a place where we wouldn't still apply human judgment. So maybe I'll put, maybe that, maybe we
I
could, can
love
we ask the audience questions? Maybe they should
it.
start to tell us, like, where do we think we don't need it?
Yeah, I mean,
But I would say everywhere.
I agree with Sally. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier about, you know, AIs don't make decisions. They provide output. And so ultimately, decisions, judgment calls, it's another piece of information, you know, that can be included, you know, in decision making by a human being. And, you know, the thing is that there's always that one thing that I think doesn't get captured is, you know, people have a gut reaction to things. You
Yeah.
know, you sometimes you have to trust your gut. Like, you know, you can have all this data and you can look at all this data and you can have all this analysis and output, but sometimes something just doesn't feel right. And, you know, you can't dismiss that because, again, that goes to what I said before about human experience, historical knowledge, you know, everything that you've done before leading up to these decisions that are being made and those judgments being made. And until AI becomes sentient and we are in Terminator, we are, I think that,
Bye-bye.
you know, I think that, you know, we have to remember that human experience and human experience, all of our human experiences, whether it's in the workplace or at home or in our personal lives, feed into every decision we make when we move forward.
Well, and that's one of the things that I was going to say, Tina, inside of that, when we move forward, it requires humans generally to take an action. Right. So, and what it can't do is assess who's going to feel threatened by that action that you're asking them to take if it's something that feels radically different? Who's going to feel excited about it and be really willing to be on the forefront of a change in an organization? Who's going to cry in a meeting because something really upset them? It doesn't take any of the human parts of that necessarily into consideration. And when we talk about making change in an organization or making decisions, those decisions generally impact others, and it doesn't have any sense of that. And I think that's part of that gut feeling around which people are going to be really impacted by this, and how do we actually need to be thoughtful about that as we are making that decision.
Love that. Crystal, I think there was a question or two that came in. So do you want to pose any of those there?
I'm seeing, oh, sorry, they're in the chat, not in the Q&A. Okay, I wasn't seeing anything in the chat. So one question is the environmental impact of AI part of the decision on when and how to use it?
Interesting.
Panelists, do you need a little bit more information, or do you think you can answer the question?
I have an opinion. I have a definite opinion. As someone, you know, I had read somewhere, and I can't remember which city it was in the US, where they were putting up an AI super center, like a computational center. And the report said something about that this AI computational center would end up using the equivalent of the entire town's water supply in order to function. Same thing that I think Saudi Arabia is trying to set up, you know, these AI super centers, you know, computational centers as well. And I think, you know, there is an environmental impact. There is certainly an environment, because the amount of computing power to generate a small amount of information or a video or, you know, a document is actually quite large, you know. And so, you know, I think I can't remember who it was. President of OpenAI, someone, one of these AI pioneers said in the news the other day, well, when you think about it, think about what the AI can do, and you're spending 22 years feeding and housing and educating a human being to do the same thing. I don't think that's the right way to look at it at all. In fact, when I read that, I was kind of horrified, actually. And I don't think that's the right way to look at it at all, because when you impact your environment, you're impacting not just the local environment, but, you know, the ecoculture and everything around it. And it kind of feeds, you know, the surrounding area, and it kind of cascades forward. So do I think it should be? I think it should be in the back of everyone's mind. There was a time where I said, we've talked about risk already in terms of, you know, when to use it and how to use it. But we also have to talk about benefits. How much are you getting back by using it as well? Mm-hmm. And I don't think we consider that enough. We're always thinking about risk, risk, risk. But then if the risk is low enough, okay, we're going to use it. But then you have to think, are we getting back enough? Is there enough of a benefit that it is worth using it, you know, at that time? And I'm not sure that all the balance that discussion's quite been balanced yet.
Tina, I agree with that. I think there's not enough openly available data for everyone to make those personal decisions moment to moment on, like, should I ask AI this or not? I don't have the exact number in front of me, but one of my colleagues told me that the amount of power and water that's generated because we say please inside of our request to the AI is some ridiculous number. And yet most of us do some version of that. I think it's going to be an ongoing conversation. I also know that the folks that are actually constructing all of those super centers have both power and water on their minds. So this isn't like they're not taking that into consideration. This is going to be a place for them to continue to evolve and and develop their own systems. Many of them are creating closed loop systems so that the water is actually recycled. Doesn't necessarily totally fix the problem because you still have to charge the system. However, they are getting much more innovative about how are we going to provide cooling and power to these systems. Because again, many of them, you know, we're talking about water consumption, but power consumption is the other really big challenge, in particular, particularly here in the United States, where our power infrastructure is dated, right? And is going to need an upgrade and is going to need more resources. Now, some of those folks also have the financial resources to be able to start building those facilities, which we're going to need anyway with the number of people on this planet.
Agreed. May I ask one more question? I know we're getting closer on time, but here's a question. Have you used AI to refine messaging or negotiation strategies as women leaders?
Mm-hmm.
A very different perspective.
I absolutely have. To try to make it sound either more executive, right? So like the way that I type, it might not sound as executive as I want it to sound for a client. For particular tone, I can come off direct and harsh if I'm in a hurry, right? And so it's a way for it to sort of take a crack at how does this actually sound the way I'm intending it to sound? And I have found it to be quite helpful for that. One other thing on that, my sister's a nurse practitioner, and she said for her, it's really helpful because it takes everything that she would say to a patient and actually helps to put that down on paper in words that the patient can understand. She has to check it again, but to be able to sort of take the technical language or the medical language and put it in a place where, okay, lay person's gonna understand that guidance and counsel that she's giving.
I'm just going to say, no, I haven't, but I will. And one of the reasons why I love doing panels like this are all the things that I learn. And so to the previous conversation on the environmental impact, I am going to take that as an action item to really understand it. I think it's important. And again, as leaders, we have to really understand what are people thinking about this and the impact that it has. So I appreciate the comments and questions coming in for my own personal inquiry and benefit. So thank you.
Laura, are you using it at all for any responses or anything along those lines?
Yeah. So similarly, I use it, but then I always edit it to make it more my voice. So sort of that similar theme. I'm using it to sharpen the message, but then I often remove a lot of words that I think are a little extra or made it a little too flowery, right? Because I think, unlike Robin, I'm probably a dance around a topic a little bit more, and I've spent my life trying to be a little bit more direct. So sometimes AI is not as direct as I want it to be, so I have to remove words. And like Sally and the conversations, I'm also a little bit more naive and don't understand the environmental impact. So a lot of learning to do. Sounds like AI needs to fix AI.
Oh my gosh.
I like that.
That could be the mic drop for us today. Well, we are coming up pretty close here to the end. Crystal, I think there were maybe a few other questions, and I know that in our prior conversation, all the panelists had said if, you know, you'd like to reach out via LinkedIn, if you have a specific question for one of these amazing ladies, then they are most open to that. And we will share this recording of the webinar. You might see we're going to come back and do this again in a year, because Sally, I love your idea. I think it would be fascinating. But I do want to take the time to thank you, Crystal, for helping with the, you know, the Q&A portion of this. I want to thank you, Steph, for your helping us with the logistics and getting this organized and the blast that went out to get people registered. So thank you both. And of course, with all my heart, I thank all of these tremendous women who have taken an hour out of their day and more to be here and share your thoughts with us. Any parting, anything that anyone else would like to add before we close it up?
I'd like to say a big thank you to you, Kieran, for putting together this panel and moderating it. What an amazing group of women. I really appreciate it. I was taking notes as you guys were talking, and I think it's so fun to be able to have the opportunity to come together and to learn from one another and be able to share that information. And I would love to see a reprisal in a year and find out what else has happened.
Yeah. All
Thanks,
right.
everybody.
Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks,
Thank you
everybody.
all.
And
And
please
be
remember
well.
to sign up for the vendor show March
Yes.
19th, 3 weeks from
We'd love to
today.
see
Would love
you.
to see you all there.
All
Thank
right.
you. Thank
Thanks,
you.
everyone.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.